And here we are, live streaming from Occupy Portland. It's Ross and Joe, the Relentless Report, and we are stoked to be occupied. How's it going, Joe?
It's going great. The tents are still covering both blocks. They're increasing their organization and diversity. I see they have a library. I went to a teach-in the other day.
Which teach-in did you get to go to? Was it a community building one or a strategy philosophy one? What kind of?
I would say it was more educational.
Uh-huh.
They're talking about the level of surveillance that we endure without even really paying attention much.
Certainly. I wish I'd have heard that, because I heard yesterday on KBOO, over the air, 90.7, I heard a brief news clip about Portland's participation in the JTTF and a renewed engagement between the city and the Joint Terrorism Task Force. And so surveillance is obviously should be forefront in our mind when we think about the pursuit of liberty and our ability to speak freely in this society, and how much that might be curtailed, you know, under regimes run by people outside the city government. You know, when you subject yourself to all kinds of strictures that maybe federal agencies might impose on a city and not even maybe inform the mayor or the chief police of ongoing investigative activities, it's pretty interesting to see a city like Portland go back out and join a federal structure that could jeopardize, you know, the elected officials' chain of command, our mayor, our governor. Who knows who gives permission?
Right. I remember there was a big movement with the JTTF some months ago now. Is there some more recent news, Ross?
That was yesterday. I heard on the news coverage of engagement with the JTTF, and I'm looking for information. If anyone has it, I'm very excited to hear about, you know, people's excitement around the JTTF. Why don't we get you back over here? We have a guest who's joined us. Excellent.
Oh, right.
And there's someone here. We're all learning how to do this. It's pretty awesome. We're live streaming, though, from Occupy Portland. This is 90.7 KBOO live stream. I hope people are out there listening to us.
Well, the Joint Terrorism Task Force decision a few months ago was quite a surprise for me. I think the first speaker was Attorney General, and then after that was the ACLU, and then we knew which way it was going to go.
Well, Do we have any insights into that? If someone does, though, we'd appreciate them down here at the live stream at Occupy Portland. What's the best physical location to describe this spot? Is there a name for this place?
Well, I think it's called Freedom Rectangle.
Freedom Rectangle.
And Main Street runs right through it.
All right. So get on Main Street and stop by and let us know what you know.
Yes.
And
Hello.
Who's our guest? Who are we with?
I'm Gracie Reed.
Oh, Gracie.
I broadcast for Prison Pipeline.
Right.
So I'm one of the broadcasters for KBOO.
I know the voice,
contribute.
But not the face.
We need money, too.
Certainly. This is the best time of year to re-engage KBOO as a member. Absolutely.
Well, can you give us a little update before we start on Prison Pipeline? I know Kovac was doing that for many years.
Ruth Kovac was doing that. Sister got ill. She moved back to Chicago. She opened up a whole bunch of space for people like us who had been interviewing with her and are involved in the prison issues. So I was one of the people that was lucky enough to get slotted in.
Well, how did you get involved with KBOO? How did that draw you in? I'm just curious.
I interviewed with Ruth and some other people in the beginning as a guest.
Certainly.
And because of my background with working with juvenile justice, and I've written books about it and prison issues, I'm in prison reform and restorative justice and that kind of thing, and I've been at that for quite some time. So,
wow.
So Ruth said, "Hey, you're a shoe-in." So, I started broadcasting, and I work a lot with addiction issues with inmates and them coming in and going out and so on. So, a lot of that's dynamic, that whole situation.
Is it a growing problem, or is it just that less resources are being expended on the actual treatment and healing of those individuals? Are there more people confronted with those issues, or is there just a lessening of federal dollars or state dollars?
Well, it's always about money, lack of money. But more importantly, at the base of this situation, there is no interest from the 1% for prison reform. Why would they want to treat people and reform them and give them better chances for, you know, more chances for better choices when there's money to be made?
I heard they're
in
looking
private
for
prisons.
I heard they're looking for customers. That was actually a line I heard from their national convention where the CCA was addressing all the assembled officials at their annual conference on the East Coast, and he said they were running short of customers.
Yes.
So I think there's certainly a profit motive.
Well, we live, as we know, because we're here. We're here at Occupy Portland, and this is a lot of what this is about.
Justice.
Well, it's always that. But who wants a bunch of people that have transformed their lives and gotten into answers to their life 101 problems, and addiction is a big issue with a lot of people. And then if you're an addict and you go out and rob someplace, somebody, whatever, because you don't have money and you're already drunk and stoned because you're so stressed up with life and the way it is.
Survival.
And you don't have a voice, and so hey, people are going to drink, they're going to drug, and they're going to join gangs. See, the social justice is broken to the core.
What does a reform look like? What are some first few steps you'd like to see in terms of prison reform?
Well, the first thing we need to do is stop being so punitive in our response to everybody that makes a mistake. We live in a punitive society. Society itself is chosen to be punitive. That would be the people with the power, the money, etc., etc. Okay. Sometimes they don't even know they're doing that. It's not like there's a bunch of bad people that get up in the morning and go, "I'm going to be punitive today."
I was wondering about that. How does that get started? Does somebody wake up in the morning and say, "I'm going to be punitive today"?
No, they don't even understand.
Well, how does that work,
what
then?
That feels like, what that looks like.
Well, if people tune back into 90.7 today, they're going to hear about the motive, and I think the whole day's programming on the radio right now is about greed and the profit motive.
Yeah,
the things that drive societies to actually fail to recognize personhood and systems of life, and instead recognize systems of profit and extraction. And that is apparently the motive, if, as it appears, they've been successful.
Well, I was one of those 1%. I came into Portland 25 years ago having had a very successful marriage to a really rich guy, and we divorced and all that. And I came in with $350,000, bought a house, 5-bedroom house, was driving a $10,000 Toyota. I was wearing, I had furs.
You were comfortable.
And see, I knew this was a lifestyle. And I'm not saying, and I don't think Occupy or anybody's saying, it's not okay to live whatever way you want to live. And there are a lot of good people in that 1% that think they're helping a situation by doling out, throwing money at stuff.
But philanthropy is necessary in this system, isn't it?
We're living in a capitalist society. I mean, I lived in Europe many, many years, in Sweden, Norway, Finland. These are all socialist democratic countries. You don't find this stuff over there. There is no homelessness. But then, of course, the countries are the size of, a little over the size of California, too.
And isn't it our system that imprisons 60% of the prisoners on the planet? Is this country?
I wish it were 60%. What it is right now is about 85% recidivism rate. 85%.
In the U.S.?
Yeah.
And as a whole, like of all the prisoners on the planet, I understood that the United States actually imprisoned the majority of those people.
Well, we're a punitive, black-white society. I don't mean even in racism, come to think of it, it does apply. But we're very cut-dried. This is the fix. We're going to do it. We have the money. you know, screw them. They've got the they've done their crime. They deserve to be in prison. And most of the prisoners I work with say same thing. I did the deal. I deserve to be in here. But for 15, 20 years for taking a drink, doing some drugs, going out and robbing, because I didn't have a way to support my kids, my family, my, and I'm terrified and I have no way of getting my head straight, and I live in a punitive society that doesn't support that.
No, it's systemic. You know,
it's a crazy, crazy arena.
What's at the root of that system then, besides greed and profit?
I think I have to go back to Dr. Rosenkranz's nonviolent communication. If I wake up in the morning, no matter what status I have, if I'm rich or poor or homeless or whatever I am, and I say, I am here on the planet to make your life more wonderful. I'm going to make your life more wonderful. You're going to make my life more wonderful. So the violence and the, again, I go back to that word punitive, the punitive attitude that we're trained from little kids on, the have, have-nots.
The bad, the good.
Nobody wants to be a have-not. Anybody here want to be a have-not? So, you know.
But being a have-less may be a first step towards balancing the inequality is choosing to have less.
Well, the
simplicity,
people that,
maybe.
The people that get it, I mean, see, what's so interesting about my life is when I was 16 years old, I was 1960, okay? Well, you know where I was. 1960.
The hate?
I came from foster homes. We crawled in those colored buses. We did our deal. We did our drugs, alcohol. I mean, I was a stark raving drug addict alcoholic at one point, and it worked for me.
What kind of drugs did you use?
Oh, are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding.
I'll just take a shot.
Have you ever heard of Dr. Timothy Leary?
Excellent.
Enough said. And
yes.
See, the deal is, I'm not saying that's the way to go, because, in fact, I bottomed out and darn near died from that.
Certainly. Okay.
But what I am saying is we started what is happening right now. Back in 1960.
Well, I think we just spent a week or two eulogizing the passing of the founder of a major software company who said one of the three most important things he ever did in his life was experiment with psychedelics. So recognizing that you're not a loser and a dropout or a failure or any of that if you've experienced other realities. It's a part of who we are. We integrate that.
I think that's a personal choice, and the deal is if you do it and it doesn't harm anybody other than yourself or whatever, then what's the point of making it illegal?
Of throwing people in prison for it? Well, there is profit in that.
And throwing people in prison for it. But I'm not here to endorse drugs. I'm
not
here to endorse any of that. That's not what I'm here to do. Because I am a recovered, in fact, addict, and I work with people that are bottoming out and dying from this stuff.
Certainly.
So I come from that arena, too, having had 30 years of experience in that. I'm 70 years old. You know, I'm an old broad.
Congratulations.
I'm an activist, and I have seen an enormous amount of life come down in this country. I love this country. I mean, I'm an American. But, you know, here's the deal. As long as we have, you know, a 99% that is in need of, well, whatever.
The basics.
Yeah, just basics.
Just
and
the basics.
And we've got 1% who is punitive and is using the banking system and the different systems that exist in capitalism to make life even less wonderful for the already compromised and oppressed. Hello? What are we supposed to be doing?
Well, again, they don't wake up and say, what can I do to torture somebody today?
No,
presumably.
They don't. It's a lifestyle. You go in with blinders on. You think you're doing the right thing. You feel like you're doing the right thing. And you know what? Camp City down here, Occupy, I am so appreciative of this. The first time I rolled through here, I went, Oh, my God, it reminds me of when we were doing the same thing in the 60s, going, no, father doesn't know best.
Interesting that you bring up the 60s. I think one thing that struck me about the gathering here is their unwillingness to define any concrete goals. Is that similar to the 60s? Or?
No, we had very concrete goals. Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Any insight into that?
Well, we realized, in my case, the Vietnam War was a total... We challenged our politicians and said, no, this is wrong. And, of course, we were just, you know, hippie kids in colorful buses, sitting in, marching, dealing with the cops that are, you know, pretty... They're trained, you know, they're trained to... flush you off the streets.
So the consciousness raising that was taking place at that time was in situations like this right here.
Well, let's a good example is I was in Ohio, not at Kent State, but I was in Ohio a few miles from Kent State when that happened. Hello, we're talking about soldiers that go in.
Who were ordered
and
to go in.
Shoot, yeah. Okay, well, so who ordered them? It's the same people that are ordering stuff now. It hasn't changed. And this is what I'm very, I don't know, maybe not alarmed. I'm not surprised because I've been seeing this chugging for a long time. But I'll tell you what bothered me is the lack of the voice that is now seated itself in these two parks here in Portland and all over the nation. It's time that the 99%. Yeah, it has this voice. We have to have this voice. And there's a lot. When I rolled through here the first time, all I saw was, oh, my God, Christian left for Occupy. Hippies over here for Occupy. Really cool people that get up every day and they go to work and they pay their taxes. Taxpayers for Occupy.
Veterans for Peace for Occupy.
There is the whole world's diversity is down here.
That's one thing that's really struck me as well. With such diversity, is there a voice? Can you say it's found its voice? What is the voice saying?
I think voices are more subtle these days. We were pretty in your face. People aren't so much in your... We are. KBOO is sort of... and a lot of people are in your face. And the people that are... I'm an in-your-face person, obviously. But I don't think that is the way... That just puts people on the defensive. And the 1%, you know, they're not... If you're in your face, they're going to dismiss you immediately. Like, you're an ignorant, in-your-face person. Oh, well... go away. We'll find ways to get you to go away.
Well, it's an excuse not to listen in a way, isn't it? It's an excuse not to listen.
Yeah. Well, it's uncomfortable, isn't it? How would you like to be the 1%, right? I mean...
You'd need some insulating barriers between you and the 99.
I think we have to be a little careful with statistics, too, because I was talking to a friend and he said, oh, it may not be 99 versus 1%. It's probably more like 10... to, you know, 95%.
Well, there is an intermediate class.
Let's give them a break, please.
There's an intermediate class of ladder climbers who imagine that eventually they'll become part of the 1% and they work to keep that institution in place that leads to that.
The so-called 1%, they're secure. They have security.
Oh, they're more than secure, I think.
Well, yeah.
To start with, they're secure.
The deal is everybody, a human being, and I have a master's degree in conflict resolution, so on, so on, so on. And so what I have found about being a human being myself, plus I have studied and worked with a lot of other human beings, when we're insecure, we go sideways. When you're insecure, you automatically go sideways.
What does that mean, sideways? It doesn't sound good.
It isn't. You get uncomfortable. You scramble. You start getting desperate.
Mentally agitated.
Find a way to be secure. Well, that's the ladder climbing. That's the, oh, my God, I've got to have money or I'm not going to be okay. And this country and the politics and all of that endorses that. That's that
acquisition.
You're raised as a little kid.
It's a game
that.
Of acquisition. Most of our games that we play as children are games of acquisition, domination.
Yeah, power over.
Yes.
Power over.
So it's a learned thing. I mean, I guess by nature you don't want to be hungry, but now you're saying by nurture, really, you like to hoard in a way.
Well, we want to be secure in our persons. We want to be able to have enough resources to feed and house ourselves and get up and go to work and pay our bills and buy those beautiful cars or bikes or whatever the heck. You want to be able to get in on the airplane and go traveling. I mean, there's nothing wrong
it's
with
freedom.
Any of that.
It's what
there's
it is to be American.
Nothing wrong with
right?
any of that. But what's wrong is if only a handful of people are permitted to have it, and there are a whole bunch that aren't permitted to have it. So there is a word there that I've been struggling with. I'm a writer. I have a book, Needs, that's in fact on Kindle Fire now, and it went international, but it was...
It's called Needs?
It's the story of the kids I worked with gang violence in residential alcohol Donald Long Center. We have children 13 to 17 years old that are done. They're done. The system has given up on them. And they're all pretty much at this point in big boy jail now.
Oh, the youth system has given up on them. You're saying education system?
Education system is broken. In my opinion, this is only my opinion, of course, but all systems in this country are broken.
Hmm.
Educational system, the justice system, even the religious system, the banking system failed.
Sure.
And so we get to the taxpayer bailed
the banks
out.
Sure.
And they raised my interest rate.
Sure.
The medical system, which is broken. I'm 70. They say I'm not supposed to have Medicare. They want to cut it.
Privatize it at least. So that you can manage it yourself with your stock portfolio.
I make about $800 a month. I live on that. Now I'm grateful. I'm rent adjusted. They take relatively good care of the old farts here in Portland because they don't want us all sitting out on the seat freezing to death. So yeah, and here we are. And I look at this beautiful tent. I look at these tents. And they're all kind of round. And so our message has to be round as well. It has to be gentle but firm. And no, you will not take advantage of us anymore. We refuse to put up with your illusionary nonsense anymore. And you're wrong. Sorry, but you're wrong. Yeah. You might want to investigate your own truth on that one.
Well, you were talking about the diversity of people in the park. They were calling this some people Liberty Park, but we're in downtown Portland, mm-hmm. across from the Justice Center, streaming live
right.
from KABU.
Right.
And
right.
the Veterans Committee is meeting in 10 minutes. So I wanted to put out the two announcements for this hour, because in 10 minutes, right now we're at 10 minutes to 2, Veterans Committee meeting is happening at Terry Schrunk Plaza in the amphitheater. That's the Veterans Committee meeting for Occupy Portland. Happening in Terry Schrunk Plaza in the amphitheater. That's at 2:00, 10 minutes from now. Economics discussion group is happening at the library. You're at the Occupy Portland here at Liberty Park, downtown Portland. So we want to let people know, Vets Committee meeting, Terry Schrunk, economics discussion group at the library. If you're close enough to get here for that, terrific. If not, there's also a 4:30 demonstration, 4:30 p.m. Wednesday. There's a demonstration against Condoleezza Rice, part of these establishments that we've been talking about. She's here in town, and Vets for Peace, after their meeting at 2, is going over, and Iraq Veterans Against the War will also be there with Veterans for Peace, and they are protesting, leaving from the Alpha camp at Occupy Portland, and they will be going to protest Condoleezza Rice, who is speaking here in town. That's my understanding. So we want to be sure people know about that. Check the website. There's going to be plenty of information coming out about that. We'll announce that 4:30 event. We'll announce that again at 4. And maybe we can just segue into the control power structure and what the military represents maybe as an outgrowth of the punitive society.
Well, at 16, 17, and 18 years old, I was sitting and protesting and marching and da-da-da-da-da with my signs, like these signs, against the Vietnam War and the Korean War and so on and so on and so on. And so how different is this war? I mean,
it's
war,
a lot
war,
longer.
War,
it's the, our
war,
longest
money,
war yet.
so I come to the conclusion that without war, there is no money.
Yeah.
You see.
Well, if you're asking that
it's
question seriously,
system.
What's new about this war? I'd have to try and say something like they're just getting better at it and better, especially at spinning it.
Exactly.
So it's an incremental thing. And if you're really asking that as a non-rhetorical question, I would say, they're just getting better.
We're specialized at war, and we have been. We've been in training, well, for a long time.
I think
see, I look at the big picture. Obviously, at my age, I'm heading for the graveyard, so I get it. I can look at the big picture, right? So, because that's what I do.
Aren't we all?
We got the long road to haul, sister.
Enjoy your youth while you have it, because I've seen, that's all of it. My parents came out of World War One. Grandparents, World War One. Parents, World War Two. Depression. We're in a depression. We're just not calling it a depression. We're calling it a recession. It's just let's change a couple of little words there, you know. Okay. So, war. I was born into this chaos. And I'll leave probably with chaos. I don't think I'm going to see the end of war in my lifetime, but hopefully, you know, you guys look young enough where you will in your lifetime, because it's got to end at some time. See, peace is not only possible, it's inevitable. It's inevitable. We have no place else to go on the planet herself. And I'm coming from, I'm part Salagi native, and my grandmother was Salagi native, Qualabunga, North Carolina, and she used to teach me a long time ago that medicine circle. And this is the way people need to be at peace with each other. But we choose to be at war with each other, and we make these excuses.
That's interesting you mentioned peace in my lifetime. I think Obama, on accepting the Nobel Prize for Peace, said, we can't expect peace in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you have any reflections on Obama.
I voted for him. I think he inherited a horrible 10 years worth of mess from the powers that be that were in office, the Bushes and the so-and-so. Now, I don't get stark raving political, frankly, because once I polarize and start, I am for him. He's on my, I drive around in a scooter, and he's on my buggy. And I like, hey, I never thought I'd see the first black president in my lifetime.
No doubt.
So that was a coup, if nothing else.
Well, we certainly live in revolutionary times. I think that's the awareness and the consciousness is rising out of the Occupy movement.
Well,
you know, fortunately, KBOO can be here to represent it.
We were part of my, I've been an activist all my life, and I was marching in in Florida during the Martin Luther King thing. See, I came from that Kennedy, Martin Luther King. I was young when all that was going on.
So what sort of voices here and now in this park, in this plaza, right, as we experience it, what voices now resonate with that sense of a call for justice and peace?
Just sitting here under the tents,
certainly,
and moving around and going out and marching, which is a way of getting in the face, and just sitting here in the round tents going, hell no. You can't have this anymore. It's time for change. It's time for a drastic change. Not by going out and you know, creating more havoc.
Change becoming from the inside here.
By presence. Yeah. Presence, silent presence is so powerful. And there can be silent there is a vibe in these tent cities on the two sides of the parks here that is awesome. Anybody listening to this, and if you're afraid to come down, I've been asking all my friends
to come be a part.
Come down.
Come be a part.
Yeah. Come
Absolutely.
Down. And I've been donating food and hand warmers and anything that I can do. But I'm particularly grateful to be able to have a voice for this based on the fact that I was at it in 1960.
Yeah. I think wool clothing is one of the primary needs right mm-hmm. now. We're right here next to a donation station where people
right.
with
right.
needs are stopping and picking up necessities, important things, which they're missing from their life. And it's here at Occupy. What they need is here. And these people have created a safe place for that to happen. It's an amazing thing.
And you know what's really awesome about this? The support, the caring, that gentle breeze vibe that's just permeating this place. There's a sanity here. Now
a reality.
The 1%, the media, once is kind of broadcasting, not this media, thank God for KBOO, but that's why I'm a part of it. But the media, Channel 2, blah, 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 and all these people, you know.
The talking heads.
The talking heads. I don't think they're saying it from their heart, because I can look at their face and go, they don't really want to say what they're saying.
Oh, she said it. There was an incredible interview, and I saw it through an Occupy website, and she said, I have insurmountable student debt. My job doesn't allow me to have a safe place to live, a reliable future healthcare income.
Right.
You know, you're talking to someone from the mainstream news on camera, one of the Occupy people, and she says, I am you. And it was pretty incredible to see that little bridge come across and know that they are us. We are all servants of that system, unfortunately.
The people that have the big money don't want what we're doing here. That's the bottom line.
What are they afraid of?
Change.
I think they're afraid of the power of the people. The power of the people to create that change.
Well, that's a given. Anytime that people unify and get together. There's a power in unity. And anytime people get together and do what is happening here, that is threatening to change, to the people that don't want change or reform or transformation, because their world is going to change. Why would they want their world to change?
I think you're right about that.
You know?
I think you're right about that. I think I remember reading something in that regard in Howard's Inn. He talked about how they had to invent racism because the white and black people were getting together too well.
Right. Well, right now we have a crisis in all the potato farmers. There was a thing on news today. I watch the news every day. And potato farmers are losing crop because there are not enough people to come pick their potatoes. Anti-immigration. Hello. Tell the immigrants, you stay home. You're taking our jobs. Now the potato farmers, they're going into the prisons and they're recruiting prisoners to come out and pick potatoes. And they're still losing crops. They can't get enough prisoners to come out and pick potatoes. Wow. Repercussions from punitive action.
Yeah, let's talk about some concrete measures at the end here. Now, there's a lot of different ideas, and again, we're talking about it's pretty slow with concrete demands. What would you like to see come out of it?
I would like to see hearts changed on an esoteric level. I think that's happening anyway. I would like to see this movement stay put until there is change. I don't care if it takes 15 years. Let's do it. However, practically, it probably ain't going to happen. The cops probably will be here taking tents down and driving people away and whatnot. It's already happened around the statue and whatnot. So if And when these tents come down, there is no reason why we have to disperse. I believe that the best thing we could all do is to continue to gather at least once a week until there is change. Keep talking to them. Keep educating them. After all, that's what we're doing. We're educating them with presence, which is powerful. Presence. Just you and I and all of us sitting here doing what we're doing.
That's a little mysterious to me, and I completely agree with it. So silence. Silent witness and education, I think, are two important things to move forward with.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to tell our listeners today, Gracie?
I think the idea is just to keep chugging, keep chugging, keep doing the deal, keep chugging. Don't give up.
How about a plug for your show then? I think it's Monday nights, isn't it?
Yeah. I broadcast. My next broadcast is November the 14th. I'm having women prisoners. They're going to be talking about addiction with women prisoners. And the December the 21st, someplace like that, I don't know. But I'm on the KBOO site, Prison Pipeline, and my past broadcasts are archived. And so you can find me there. And I'm just going to continue to broadcast for KBOO. I really am grateful for that. And by the way, give money to KBOO. We need funds.
Go, Gracie. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
Bye, sweetie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Bye.
That was awesome. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Here.
Hi, how's the check?
Great, we're live. Lynn, thanks for joining us today. Can you tell us about your group, please?
Certainly. I work with my dad, Senator Mike Gravel, that some of you may know about regarding direct democracy. So currently what we have is a representative democracy, and that's where we give all of our power away on election day and then beg and plead and protest for our politicians to do perhaps what they've promised or do right by the citizens.
That's how I felt, too. So what can we do about that?
So direct democracy is different. Direct democracy, the people vote on the issues along with voting on their politicians. So we see the popular uprisings have happened before. So whether it's Vietnam War protests or the nuclear freeze in the 1980s, mm-hmm. But nothing changes because we still go to war at the drop of a hat and we still manufacture nuclear weapons. So there was not any change in the government process, and that's what we're talking about. So if you get a chance to look at direct democracy through a website called National Initiative for Democracy, the website is NI4D.us, or you can just search Mike Gravel or National Initiative for Democracy, and you'll find that. What's exciting about it is there's a 4-minute film that explains the process of direct democracy and how we could enact that at the federal level, so that the people become the fourth check in our system of checks and balances. So, you know, where we see the majority of people want to end the wars and bring the money home, $4 trillion, that would be voted in by the people. The representatives don't have an interest in doing that because they, you know, make their money, quite frankly, from the Halliburtons, the Northrop Grummans, the McDonnell Douglas, the weapons purveyors, or whatever is the 1%.
Sure.
It's easy for the 1% to control the Senate and the Congress versus the 99%.
Sure. How often or how big of an issue would it have to be before there was a citizen vote? How would that work practically?
It would depend on how the people, if the people want the right to vote on the issues. So you see, the direct democracy works very well in the Swiss model. So 4 times a year, the Swiss citizens vote on policy. We have it here at the state level in Oregon, where you vote by initiative on policy. Now, it's very important to make sure that there's transparency of who's contributing the money. So when you know if the Koch brothers or PG&E or whoever is contributing money on an issue, the people, if they're informed about who's contributing the money, then they'll make their own mind up as to whether that's in their best interest or not. So if the people choose to empower themselves to vote on the issues, they can do that at a website, which is ni4d.us, and then we can choose what we want to vote about. So it's very much what you're doing here on Occupy Wall Street here in Portland. It's that you're choosing what do we want to vote about, and then we take a consensus. Is this going to be one of our major issues? I think war and ending wars would be one of those major issues.
But why have we been doing stabs of this for? Because I just did this last broadcast, and we've been doing stabs of this for a long time. Why is this not? Why is it not
it's not in
taking? What's
it's
going
not
on?
In the best interest of the media, and it's not in the best interest of the politicians. So right. They don't want us talking about direct democracy.
Well, that I know about, and that, of course, we know about. But what's interesting is the people. Why are the people not? See,
I don't think we're fully informed.
So what needs to happen to get
education
other than what we're doing? Here?
Education. Yeah, so go out, take a look, Google direct democracy, Google National Initiative for Democracy, look at the Swiss system, look at the California system. But the California system is slightly, well, actually it's quite flawed because it's a money game. And in California, you have 2 months to get something on the ballot. So it means you, if you've got enough money, you can make it happen, even if it's not even constitutional. Right. So California's system needs some reform. Yes. But even if you talk to the leaders of the gay rights movement, Rick Jacob of the Courage Campaign, he is still in favor of initiatives in direct democracy because he said even with Prop 8, which should have never gotten on the ballot anyways because it's against somebody's constitutional rights, he was able to, the conversation started. So people who their neighbor put out a Prop 8 sign in their yard, they were able to have a conversation and said, you know, hey, I feed your cat when you're in Europe. And guess what? I'm gay, or my brother's gay. And, you know, your sign hurts my feelings. Let's talk about it. And so you see the maturity of the American people when we are not held in civic adolescence, which is what we have right now with representative democracy, but we mature, and we mature on the issues because we have a conversation as a community rather than just letting our leaders decide for us.
So in other words, it gets down to the grassroots, each one teach one, each one share with one, each one take contact, each one. And there, to me, it's, as I'd said before, it's unify, 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 heart to heart, soul to soul, mind to mind. And stand up for in a mass like this is what this is symbolic of what we're doing down here. You know?
Oh, and it's going to be essential to be grassroots because the media, the four corporations that control our mainstream media, don't want this out because the campaign finance funds them. So all of the money that these presidential candidates collect from everybody, including the corporations and all the small donations too, go right out the door to make the media buys for the advertisement. So the media is not going to tell you about this. It's going to have to be grassroots.
Well, aren't we still in trouble, really, if money is still in politics? I mean, in the lead up to the Iraq War, I think I remember 66% of the American population believed that Iraq attacked us. When you're up against those numbers, even with the direct democracy, you're not necessarily going to make the right choice.
So that happens, and you would see that, you know, so the media didn't do their job. The lead up to the Iraq War, there were four presentations on not going to war and about 340 on going to war in the 2 weeks prior. So the media is not doing its job. But when the people make a mistake, they are more likely to correct it quickly. George Washington said that, which is the people feel the pain, not their leaders. Right. So the people would correct that mistake. And you even saw a much more of a close vote between the people as to whether Iraq, you know, we should go to war. Whereas you look at the vote in the Senate, oh my gosh, you know, that was, what was it, 90 to 95 to 5? Mm-hmm. So the people make better decisions. And if you look at our great history, so women's right to vote, mm-hmm. child labor laws, environmental laws, mm-hmm. campaign finance reform, all came from the people first, not from our leaders.
I think what my observation was, being part of a lot of that as an activist for, you know, I'm 70 and I started at 16, so there you go.
There you go.
And so the deal is, I've seen these movements, as I said, come and go, come and go, come and go. But one of the things I've observed, and boy, I'm just asking, begging people, don't give it up. It's a very slow, the powers that be are well entrenched, and they want to stay entrenched. And so we have these movements and we get all excited. And then I wrote a poem about this, and then we form committees and then we go back to sleep as Babylon falls around our feet.
Right.
So the idea is to take these tools like direct democracy and KBOO communication and all of these freedom, you know, this gives voice. Well, the powers that be want this down too.
Yeah.
They don't want KBOO to exist, obviously. Yeah. So we need to, though, keep chugging because it's a slow process.
And to have some process, and we have it online now, where you don't have, you know, the protests set the climate for change, but you need to have something that is accountable and that the powers that be can see the numbers that are voting on this online.
Yes,
we want the right to vote on our issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why can't we vote on how our tax dollars are spent? I would vote for education. I don't want to vote for these military wars that make us more enemies.
Right. And, so how big an organization are you now?
We're tiny. We're tiny, grassroots.
Just starting.
My dad, Mike Gravel, ran in the presidential election against Obama, Hillary, and all that. He was getting very good traction, but you know, what happens is when you call out General Electric as a military industrial complex, the MSNBC cuts your mic.
Yes.
So,
I remember that.
So basically, he was getting good traction. His main message was, I want to empower the people because the people can't be bought off. The Congress, it's very easy for special interests, corporate, be what they may, to buy off 100 senators or the members of the House. Mm-hmm. It's not so easy to buy off and make us vote against our best interests. Now, we have to be very careful as this is crafted because we need transparency.
Yes.
So as long as we know who's contributing big money, they can't obfuscate with terms like, you know, this is brought to you by people for the patriotic America.
Sure.
So you need to identify who are the big money donors behind that.
Yes.
So then do you think that this idea could work even in an era of unlimited corporate spending on policies? Do we need to get
rid of
that?
I think as long as there's transparency, yes. Now, the big issue with trying to cap money is freedom of speech. So you end up coming up against that time and time again. So my bigger thing that I would stake my stick on the ground would be transparency. Because if you have the Koch brothers giving unlimited amount of money on one side of an issue, as long as the American people can see it's the Koch brothers and that's their issue, it doesn't matter. When we've seen this in the past, like in California, we had an initiative that PG&E wanted. And when the people saw that PG&E was supporting it, and I think they outspent by, 25-1 or something like that. But the people said, no, it's not for us. And we had also seen one with Philip Morris down in Southern California, where they were seeking to make the tobacco law stronger, right? Yeah, no. The people could see that what they were trying to do is lower the standards in the cities and raise the standards in the hinterlands. And the people didn't go for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, the website is NI4D.US. There's also another great website called vote.org. Check out the National Initiative for Democracy and share it. If it resonates with you, please share it, talk about it, blog about it. It's a way to vote online for your right to vote on issues.
Yes.
Thanks, Lynn. Are there any good examples of other municipalities or other times in history where this has worked?
So Oregon has relatively good initiative law. So the states, I think it's about 24, 25 states that have initiative law. And it was brought about at the turn of the century because the railroads had the politicians in their pockets. And the progressive movement said, we got to change this. So what they did, Hiram Walker in California was the governor, and he was a people's person, and he and was a big part of enabling the people to vote on issues, not just the politicians. So we see that even with California's, you know, unwieldy model, and that needs some a heck of a lot of reform, but it's still better than letting the politicians call the shots without any people's vote weighing in.
Well, I see apathy as a disease unto itself. There's so much apathy, and I think people get so tired and so confused and so discouraged. And I see a lot of giving up in between movements. Burst of energy and then settling down in sort of an apathy and then a burst of energy. If we could just stay consistent.
Well, and I'm so, when I see these beautiful people down here and that you're running on adrenaline because it's so powerful. But at a certain point, adrenaline wears out. And I got to say, I thought after the Obama election, and of course we saw nothing change. In fact, he's prosecuted more whistleblowers than Bush, which is just frightening. I mean, poor Bradley Manning it was under torture, and he's the one who is a major start of the Arab Spring when he released those documents, or if it was him, that's got the Tunisians started. That came from whoever it was, but whoever did that, it harkens back to the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg. We need more whistleblowers. We need more transparency. And Bradley Manning, he's a hero. And the fact that Bush had him under torture, that's just insane. So I'm so glad that you people have come out. You're not apathetic, but I want to make sure that you're not just running on an adrenaline, that you have something online to gather for vote, and a mechanism for making change. And if you want to turn around corporate personhood, register a vote. Register a vote, and you watch how quickly the Supreme Court will turn around on that.
Yeah. Bradley Manning is a hero, no doubt. Thanks for saying that. What are some concrete steps you'd like to see taken in this direction towards a more direct democracy?
Right now, education. Start talking about it. Start looking at the film on direct democracy that's on that website, National Initiative for Democracy. Check out, it's a 4-minute, 41-second film. There's a book by my dad called Citizen Power, which was originally written in the 70s, but it's as applicable, and it was re-released with Chapter 12, which is the most important, which it talks about who stole the American dream and how do we enable it.
Yes.
So again, those are areas.
Yes.
Do some searching online, educate yourself. And if you feel so inclined, go to the website and vote to empower yourself.
Well, it would be great to have you as a regular voice on KBOO, huh?
Oh, I'd love
it.
I'm in the Bay Area, so if there's anything I can do to help, I will give you my contact information, and we are just so thrilled. Thank you.
It's called telephone. We can
all
talk
right.
to you on the telephone.
We'll make it happen, and thank you so much for this work.
Thanks for coming by, Lynn.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by. That's awesome.
Thank you. That was
Well, here we are at Occupy Portland.
Yes, we're in Occupy Portland.
I'm Ross.
I'm Grace.
And we're here for KBOO. We're broadcasting live over the internet, as you know, because you went through KBOO.fm to get our signal, hopefully, or it's being recorded, and hopefully you can contribute, become a part of this community voice, which has brought us out here to engage in another larger community voice.
Right. KBOO 90.7 FM. We need funds. We need to stay on the air. We need to be the free voice that we are for these important issues. And we are here at Occupy Portland today to give free voice and transparency and education as to what this is all about. Hey, I'm 70 years old. I'm sitting here. I broadcast for KBOO Prison Pipeline, and I've been involved for since 16 years old as an activist with what has accumulated here for Tent City. Just I call it Tent City. It's the round Tent City that we used to have when I was 16. Hey guys, come on down. If anybody out there is listening to this and you're afraid of this, or you're not sure what this is about, all you have to do is come into this Occupy Portland tents and catch the vibes down here. It is sane. It's sober. There are wonderful people here that are trying to make a difference. We have people we just interviewed from California. We have people everywhere that are coming in, and they're trying to educate us as to what we can do. These tents probably won't be here forever and ever and ever, but they have to stay in your hearts. And if you can just keep on chugging, but come on down while it's here and enjoy us, enjoy the symbolism and the movement, because this is what's going to change the mess. It's going to change the mess.
Yeah.
And we have to change the mess. We're in trouble, people. We're in trouble. We have to change the mess.
We heard a lot of great ideas down here. We just talked to Lynn about direct democracy, where citizens vote on issues themselves. And it seems to me you still need an educated populace. However, you know, if you're more invested in it, if what you do matters, I think that can't hurt.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I brought up the example of before the Iraq War, 66% of the people thought Iraq attacked us.
Right.
But, you know, if they were going to make a choice that had the destination of their children or their neighbor's children behind them, maybe they'd be motivated not to just trust the guy in the fancy suit.
Right. Well, something I have observed over the years, and again, I started being an activist at 16, and I'm 70 now, and I'm still an activist. And here's the deal, from what I have heard and seen and experienced myself, is investigate your own truth as to what you're hearing. If you're hearing something, it doesn't matter where it's coming from, including here. Investigate your own truth as to if that issue is true, as she had said, transparent or not. What's the motive behind every word that's spoken out of the human mouth usually has some kind of motive behind it. And a lot of those motives are good, but many of these motives are not good, or they're ignorant. Investigate your own truth.
So just be a critical thinker, basically.
Yes, question everything.
That seems like that's a prerequisite almost for democracy. If you want to live in a democracy, that's part of the deal.
Question everything. Get involved. You need funds, right? You need money. Get up, go to work, pay your taxes, you know, do all that stuff. And contribute to things that are really making a difference on the planet and in Portland, you know. And this is making a huge difference. KBOO makes a huge difference because it is a free voice, for instance.
You mentioned you've been at this for a while. What are some of the concrete victories you can point to, and maybe how did those things happen? You know, what can we learn from the past in that regard?
Well, the one thing that comes to my mind is when Kent State happened and the National Guard went in and by command and shot down my peers, shot down the youth who were sitting doing exactly what we're doing here, really. Anti-war, anti-Vietnam War, anti-Korean War, you know, so on, all the wars that were at that time. And after that happened, a shockwave not only went through Ohio and, of course, Kent State, but it went through the nation. And it's almost like it took those human sacrifices. And any human that does die behind these movements is a human sacrifice. And I'm here to tell you it gets honored on some level. I call it the universal level. But after Kent State, I realized that things took a huge shift, and they ratcheted up. And the movements it angered enough people.
Now, what racked it up? Now the police response or the citizen response?
Oh, just you start shooting kids at a university.
More,
it's like
more
somebody
people came out.
National Guard would go in and shoot a bunch of kids at Portland State U. Can
sure.
you imagine?
A lot of people came out of their houses at that point. They weren't ready to come down
like
yet.
Like ants.
But if that happens, they're going to come down.
Like ants.
Yeah.
Ants coming out of an anthill. Like, what in the heck?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Right.
What is this about? And it woke a lot of people up. And
What form did that take? Was that the silent presence that you're talking about in this regard? Or how did people make it known that this was not okay?
It was very verbal. I mean, there was a lot of grief and anger, a lot of anger.
Were people
from,
in the streets or?
From the just normal people that were just good old folks, you know, getting up every day and going to work and going to school and paying their taxes and paying their bills and so on and so on. And they couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
How can this government kill our kids, like on our own soil? Yeah. I guess it's okay to kill people on another soil, but when it happens on our own soil, you know, it changes people. Anytime anything happens in the United States at that level, the voices ratchet up. There is more voice, if you will, and people get busy, and they get involved, and they run around with their hair ablaze, you know, trying to change it.
Right.
But the only problem is with that, everybody wants an instant fix and an instant change. Something should have been changed way before the National Guard went in and shot these kids down.
Yeah.
So, see, that was the point. We needed change way before then.
Yeah. You mentioned more people were angered. How did that lead to concrete change? Did they vote for somebody different the next time, or did the same politicians change their policies? What happened in that regard?
No, we pretty much, I think that there was an attempt to vote in, Kennedy won, for instance, and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. I mean, they were all shot down. Guess what? Guess why? They were all shot down, guess why? But the point is, there was that movement to get them in, let's make a change. People don't know what to do. They didn't know what to do. And besides, who to vote for?
Who knows what to do?
Yeah. Eisenhower. Let's see, I like Ike. I remember when I was in a classroom, I was about 12 years old maybe, and my teacher put on the little blackboard, "I like Ike."
Okay.
And so all the kids were chanting, "I
sure.
like Ike." We were told to chant
sure.
in the hallways, "I like Ike."
Sure, that's
like
your training. Ike. Welcome to America.
And of course, Eisenhower was voted in. He was voted in. And I'm not so sure. So politics, we have the media of politics, but it's like our last guest. If you're going to choose a politician to help you make that change, if you give that person all the power and you just relinquish the power and you trust too much, there's an innocent trust that is killing us on the grassroots movement.
Everybody likes to trust, though.
Well, you can trust and question at the same time. You have to trust and question at the same time. Investigate
sure.
your truth. Trust
sure.
in the process, but what is that process, and what exactly is it going to do for you, and will it make your children's lives better, and will it make our lives better, and so on, you know. So.
So sure. For getting back to the changes after the Kent State killings, was it simply a matter of more people being involved, more people, just knowing what's going on, and then the politicians say, we can't get away with what we used to be able to get away with, and now we've got to do this.
I mean, can you imagine the shame of the politicians that got that? Who called the National Guard and said, "Hey, get over there and take care of those kids, stop them in any way you can"? And so a lot of those were young men. That were in that guard. And you think those kids that fired and killed their peers, you don't think that did ruin their lives for the rest of their lives and their families and their politicians that they voted for? You don't think that didn't have a ripple effect that haunted them from that day they shot their peers down? And they just got too involved in marching to the to the drum of that drummer. They didn't question, what do you mean shoot my friend over there that's sitting, and what are you talking about? I'm not going to shoot that person. Did anybody say, so that kid standing there, what kind of education are we talking about here? What kind of militarism? What happened there that kid stood there and shot another kid?
Yeah,
you have to look at that.
Well, you have to look at that. However, I wouldn't necessarily look at the individual, just because I think you can always find someone mm-hmm. who, because of whatever unfortunate mm-hmm. background they have, they won't have the facility really to question that.
Well, that's the point, though, isn't it? And all movements start with individuals.
That's
all
true.
Movements start with individuals. And if we have we have one kid in this country that is trained to be a killer, a legalized killer, we're in trouble. So what kind of education are we doing? What are we doing that we're educating our children? I'm 70 years old, I can talk like this.
It's harder for young guys like me, huh?
How are you educated?
You're killing me.
Were you educated to go kill somebody on demand?
I missed that somehow. Well, you mentioned you've been an activist since 16. How did you miss out on the greed? Aren't you an American? How'd you miss that boat?
Actually, I didn't miss out on the greed. I got into apathy. That's why I can speak about it. See, I don't really think, I think people like me are very valuable because we get to see the pattern. I've been able to see the pattern. The pattern, the big picture, the pattern. And I go back to 40 years of pattern. And
a pattern among what? Just the way society is organized, do you mean, in that regard?
The way the United States functions
okay.
as a nation, as a people. There's a pattern of electing people without thinking about it. There's a pattern of letting things slide. There's a pattern of educating our young people to do stuff that isn't even moral, let alone okay. There's a pattern of letting things go because I'm so tired. I mean, when you get up and you work two jobs and you have kids and you go home at night, you're going to go out and you know, do other things to make your life or society's life. You know, you're thinking about yourself. You're not thinking about society as a whole. Which is why voices like what we're doing here, for instance, and like what there's a whole lot of people right now on the planet that are, and in this country that are doing what we're doing, that are talking about what. Well, so how do you change things? How do you change things?
Yeah.
You change yourself. You don't have anything to give away if you don't change yourself. And then you go, each one teach one. You go and you share. Hey, this is how I changed. This is how I got more peaceful. This is how I got more real, more transparent, more transformative, more... Thank you, darling. I just got handed a cup of coffee. Blessed be. I love coffee. Thank you so much.
That does seem to be a consistent theme, though, and something they're talking about a lot here is education. Once you educate someone, you can't erase that, even if the tents disappear tomorrow.
Exactly.
Once someone is educated... That step will not be taken back.